I'm going to begin in Ephesians 6, the first two verses, and most of you probably already are cluing to what's going on. As we're most likely aware, today is Father's Day. And what I'm going to talk about today is probably not exactly what you would think I would talk about on Father's Day. But I think there's some very good points in the sermon that I could have spoken today. And I'm going to sum it up with a quote from the Proverbs. A wise son maketh a glad father. And that is said several times and in various forms throughout Psalms and Proverbs. A wise son maketh a glad father. That being said, Ephesians 6, verse 1 says, Children, obey your parents in the Lord. For this is right. Is there any question about that verse? Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and thy mother, which is the first commandment with promise. And if you have read the Ten Commandments, you would understand that, if you remember what they say. That we have these list of commandments going down through here that says, do this, do this, do this, do this, do this. And then we get to this one, and it says, honor your father and your mother, verse 3, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. And that's why it says it's the first commandment with promise. That he lists the Ten Commandments, and it isn't until you get down to this one that he says, because if you do this, you're going to get good stuff. Which should give us just a bit of pause on honor thy father and thy mother. And I'm going to accept that most of us gather that and move on to something else. I have had a question asked of me, and turn to Matthew 23, verse 9, to find that area where the question is asked. And I thought we should talk about this and incorporate some of the things that we already should know about fathers and mothers and the obedience of them into these things to kind of blend the two. Verse 9 says, And call no man your father upon the earth, for one is your father which is in heaven. And I was asked by an individual, if it's all right for us to call our earthly father's father, or if this is only applying to calling someone like a priest a father. Okay? And I think it's important if we bounce back to the very first part of this chapter. It says, Jesus spake to the multitudes and to his disciples. Okay? So we understand who's hearing this. And then he says, The scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. All therefore whatsoever they bid you observe, that observe and do, but do not after their works, for they say, and do not. And then he continues to tell some of the ills of the scribes and the Pharisees. And if you look in verse 6, it says, They love the uppermost rooms at feasts and the chief seats in the synagogues and greetings in the markets and to be called of men rabbi, rabbi. Otherwise, they're pretty much standard politicians. They like to go to dinners and be seated at the head table and they like to be noticed on the sidewalks and recognized and acknowledged for who they are. And we have some obligation to recognize them for who they are. And Jesus stated that, didn't he? He said the scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. Do what they say, but not what they do. Don't behave like them, but understand that they have authority over you. Then in verse 8 he says, But be not ye called rabbi, for one is your master, even Christ, and all ye are brethren. So Jesus is doing this level playing field thing amongst his followers. He says, And call no man your father upon the earth. The word and ties the two thoughts together, right? Call no man your father upon the earth. For one is your father which is in heaven. Now, does this mean that Jesus doesn't acknowledge that we had earthly fathers? Or is it rather that he is saying, you only have one Creator that is the true Father of all things and beings? He goes on in verse 10, neither be ye called masters, for one is your Master, even Christ. Now, we look to other texts in the New Testament. In fact, that one we were reading in Ephesians 6, what was the very next verse that we didn't read after that section about obeying your parents? And he said, bringing them up in the nourishing and admonishing of the Lord, which gives us some idea of what he meant by the relationship between parents and their children. Looking to God. Dad, our earthly father, Dad, doesn't always do things right. We may look at our father, some of us, may look at our father and say, wow, he was sure a swell guy. Others may look at our father and say, he was somewhat short of a swell guy. Not wanting to put a title on that. And regardless of what status our father falls under for us, we have to acknowledge that he was still a guy that made mistakes. And that what we're really looking at is a good father is identified as the one who brings up his child in those things that God has said. Here's how you bring up that child. And some of the things that were said by the Sunday school classes this morning when they came up, for those of you that were here to hear that, there were some good points made on this idea of fathers and the relationship of God to his children and the relationship of us in our households one to another. But I hope that we can see in this, in the context of Jesus speaking here in Matthew 23, that what he is really referring to is, don't call anyone other than the God in heaven your Creator or your Father. As support of that, I would like to look at some things that Jesus said that I find interesting in John 8. I will begin reading at verse 38 in John 8. Jesus speaking says, I speak that which I have seen of my Father, and ye do that which ye have seen of your father. They answered and said unto him, Abraham is our father. Jesus saith unto them, if ye were Abraham's children, ye would do the works of Abraham. But now ye seek to kill me, a man that hath told you the truth, which I heard of God. This did not Abraham. Ye do the deeds of your father. Then said they to him, we be not born of fornication, we have one Father, even God. Now this is kind of a hanging statement, me speaking. This is kind of a hanging statement for them because they acknowledge the fact that God is the Creator and their Father. Okay? And remember that Jesus, throughout Matthew 5, 6, and 7, uses language like, it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Your father, and your father, and your father. He didn't just say, my father. Jesus included them under that umbrella of being children of God. But here they acknowledge that God is supposed to be their father. But Jesus has already opened the door on this idea. He's kind of led them with the words without really saying what he's thinking here. He says, you do what your father showed you. I do what my father showed me, which shows a differential. Then he says, you do the deeds of your father. And so they got the point that he's saying, you have a different father other than Jehovah. Verse 42, Jesus said unto them, if God were your father, you would love me. For I proceeded forth and came from God, neither came I of myself, but he sent me. Why do you not understand my speech? I just pause because I want you to think about that phrase. He says, why do you not understand what I'm saying? Even because you cannot hear my word. And he wasn't saying that there was something blocking the ear canal. He was saying, something's blocking this in your brain. You refuse to take what I'm saying to you to heart. Ye are of your father, the devil. And the lusts of your father ye will do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth. And I keep emphasizing that because I really believe truth is a big ingredient in understanding this thing about God and the father-son or father-child relationship between God and his people. Bode not in the truth. Now he's talking to the leaders of the nation of Israel. And he says, you didn't abide or stay in the truth. Because there is no truth in him. The one who he's saying is their father, the devil. When he speaks a lie, he speaks of his own. For he is a liar and the father of it. Now, I don't think any of us believe that Satan brought forth a child called lie. But that Satan, his principles, if you could call them that, or his modem of operandi, is untruth. Lies. And Jesus says, their behavior says, we are living lies. We're doing lies. And so he calls the devil their father. Jesus didn't have any problem with the understanding or the concept of who God was, who Satan was, who their earthly fathers were, who their ancestors were. He didn't misunderstand that when he said, call no man on earth your father. Nor was he limiting us to only referring to God as the Father. Because Jesus uses this language in a very broad sense here in this text. And I don't believe he thought that Satan actually generated these people into existence, but that he was the father of their mental position. Verse 51 says, verily, verily, I say unto you, if a man keep my sayings, he shall never see death. At verse 56, he says, your father Abraham... Oh, wait a minute. He said, if Abraham were your father, you would do these things. And now he says that Abraham is their father. Once again, we're expected to understand that he's saying, Abraham is not the father of what's going on in your heart. Abraham was just your genetic ancestor. Your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day, and he saw it and was glad. Abraham accepted that saying of God as truth. And what Jesus is saying is, you need to be sons of Abraham as pertains to Abraham's behavior, as pertains to Abraham's mentality, to Abraham's spirit. And thus we see other texts that are authorized to speak in such fashion, and don't get ahead of me, I know that there's a greater authorization, but let's work it in order here. In Romans 4, verse 1, the Apostle Paul says, what shall we say then that Abraham our father, as pertaining to the flesh, hath found? So Paul has no problem calling Abraham their father. And jumping down through the text here to verse 11, it says, and he, referring to Abraham, received the sign of circumcision, a sign of circumcision, or circumcision as a sign, a token. a seal of the righteousness of the faith which he, Abraham, had, yet or while still being uncircumcised, that he might be the father of all them that believe, though they be not circumcised, that righteousness might be imputed or counted to those people also. Which people? The people that believed, like Abraham did. And, in addition, the father of circumcision to them which are not of the circumcision only, but who also walk in the steps of that faith of our father Abraham, which he had being yet uncircumcised. And the world likes the little picture of the father walking out in front through the snow and the little child reaching to try and fill the father's footsteps. But this is not talking about a literal following in the footsteps of Abraham, but a figurative or a spiritual following of Abraham, in that Abraham heard the word of God and said, God said it, thus it's true. And he believed it, and he was accounted, or counted. He went, you know, we go, how many people are righteous? One, two. He was counted as righteous, and thus we, two, three, four, five, six, are counted as righteous. Quite literally, God counts up those that are righteous. And it's based on your belief of his words. It's really not a difficult concept. Verse 13, for the promise that he should be heir of the world. Now we're getting into this, into the heart of this father-son relationship. You know, dad can still be quite healthy, and the kids still like to look around and go, someday that's going to be mine. Dad has some stuff that's nicer than my stuff. Young boys like to wander around the garage and look at dad's tools and think, I want to use those. And girls have their things they look for too. But that's a very natural part of the relationship between fathers and sons. Fathers like to think that they can give something to their sons, and sons like to think they're going to get something from their father. The promise that he, Abraham, should be the heir of the world was not to Abraham or to his seed through the law, but through the righteousness of faith. For if they which are of the law be heirs, faith is made void and the promise made of none effect. Because the law worketh wrath, for where no law is, there is no transgression. Therefore it is of faith. So the author is just saying, with all that said, everything hinges on believing the Father, that it might be by grace, to the end the promise might be sure to all the seed, not to that only which is of the law, but to that also which is of the faith of Abraham, who is the father of us all. So clearly the Apostle Paul did not have a problem referring to Abraham as the father of all those that believe. But I spoke a moment ago, as I'm sure some of you probably thought, that there was a much higher authority than that. And the Apostle Paul here speaks of that authority. He says, verse 17, as it is written, I have made thee a father of many nations. Before him whom he believed, even God, who quickeneth the dead and calleth those things which be not, as though they were. Yes, God has the right and the ability to look at things in the future that haven't happened yet and speak with language that sounds like they have happened. Yet have I set my king upon my holy hill of Zion. I don't believe any of us think that Jesus is over there in Zion right now, reigning. But God spoke of it as a done deal. And he spoke of Abraham as a done deal. Before he had even had any children, he said, I have made you a father of many nations. In 1 John chapter 3, and it would be a good thing actually to bounce back into the third or into the second chapter. We're not going to do that today, but I'm suggesting that for your own reading. Speaking of the return of Jesus and things pertaining to that. And then in John 1 John 3, as we read in verse 1, it says, "Behold what manner of love the Father hath bestowed upon us." And I would remind you that John 3:16 says, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son." Right? "Whosoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life." What manner of love, behold, otherwise, look at. Take a look at what manner of love the Father has bestowed upon us that we should be called the sons of God. "Therefore the world knoweth us not, because it knew him not. Beloved, now are we the sons of God, and it doth not yet appear what we shall be, but we know that when he shall appear, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is." We just read in Romans 4 that God calls those things that aren't yet as if they were. And he says, John here says, what a wonderful act of love it is that God has called us his sons, even when it has not yet appeared what we are going to be. Acts 17, in that famous sermon on Mars Hill, the Apostle Paul acknowledges this in his small sermon to them. At least it's what's recorded here is fairly small. In Acts 17, in verse 24, it says, "God that made the world and all things therein, seeing that he is Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands." Now, you have to ask yourself, if God created us and everything around us and the place that we live, is he not our Father? I think the one that creates has the right to claim. It goes on to say that he doesn't dwell in temples made with hands, neither is worshipped with men's hands as though he needed anything. Paul is saying this in light of this altar that was out there with the inscription to the unknown God. He says, God doesn't need you to take a chunk of rock and carve it up. He made everything. It says, as though he had need of anything, seeing he giveth to all life and breath and all things. Yes, we did not come into existence from God in the same way that my son and your sons and daughters, our children, came into existence through a man and wife. But he is the one that started the whole chain, right? In that he gave the breath of life after he formed that creature. Verse 26, "And hath made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on the face of the earth." And it's interesting to me when I read that statement, because you know, it was many, many, many hundreds of years later that science figured out that blood was the one thing we all have in common. And that we figured out our different blood types, but that it goes and crosses ethnic lines, right? They don't have to say that you're Caucasian down at the blood bank on the bottle. And he made this statement years before science ever acknowledged that was the case. "And," in the middle of verse 26, "hath determined the times before appointed and the bounds of their habitation, that they might seek the Lord, if haply they might feel after him and find him, though he be not far from every one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being, as certain also of your own poets have said, for we are also his offspring. For as much then as we are the offspring of God, we ought not to think that the Godhead is like unto gold or silver or stone, graven by art and man's device. And the times of this ignorance God winked at, but now commandeth all men everywhere to repent. Because he has appointed a day in the which he will judge the world in righteousness by that man whom he hath ordained, whereof he hath given assurance unto all men, in that he hath raised him from the dead." Okay, now we've introduced some new thoughts into this thing. That we ought to be able to look around and look at ourselves in the mirror and understand that we can't make God out of gold, silver, stone, wood, whatever. Because we look at ourselves, and if we are His offspring, Paul says, then we ought to understand that God is a living God, a real, tangible God. And that our hope, since we all seem to keep falling over and ending up over there or scattered somewhere on ashes or lost at sea or whatever it happens to be, our hope is in this thing called the resurrection, and that there's a judgment day in which we're going to have to acknowledge whether we accepted the truths of God or not and lived by them, did truth. But the next verse is equally important. And when they heard of the resurrection of the dead, some mocked, and others said, we will hear thee again of this matter. Here it is, the great divide. This really is the bottom line, isn't it? Here's where we find the difference between the ones who are the sons of God, who will become that which we haven't seen yet, and those that will not. The great division. Some mocked. Some said, we'll hear you again. The Bible is a history account of numerous divisions. Just go right down through the stories and you see how Abraham was separated out. Oh! Before that, there was a gathering in a boat, wasn't there? Those that got in, they were saved. They had sanctuary in that boat. We go right down through the stories. Those people that were brought out of the land of Egypt into the wilderness was actually a sanctuary, and they were brought out and separated out. And that concept does not go away in the church. We think, well, we're living amongst all the people in the world, but the words are still there in 2 Corinthians 6, aren't they? Come out from among them and be ye separate and touch not the unclean thing and I will be a what? I'll be your father and you'll be my sons. This separation out of those that choose to be a good child, one obedient to the father that, as the class that sat over here said this morning, that shows mercy to those that are obedient to him. Romans 8, I'll start reading at verse 14, says, for as many as are led by the Spirit of God, they are the sons of God. Now, does not this imply then that those who do not are not? If you're not led by the Spirit of God, you're not the Son of God. And that's what Jesus was talking about in John 8. When he says, you are not Abraham's children, or you're not the sons of God, you're the sons of the devil, it was based on their refusal to accept the Spirit of God and to be led by it, to hear the words of the prophets and of the law and live by it. Isaiah 28, that text that we read quite often where it says, line upon line, piece upon piece, here, there, little, little, little. What does it say right after that? These be, look at it, see what it says. This is the rest with which he will cause the weary to rest, but you wouldn't hear it. And you say, wait a minute, I thought the rest was the kingdom of God. Those words that he gave were the kingdom of God. When Jesus says that it's among you, he's saying, you've got the information. It's in your midst already. You people could be it. All you have to do is say, we yield. We'll do what you say. We accept that the things that you've said already are in fact truth. So many as are led by the Spirit of God, they are the sons of God. Verse 16 says, the Spirit itself beareth witness with our spirit that we are the children of God. We take those things that Paul said in Acts 17. He came to that conclusion, right? He put together his thoughts and said, ah, even your own poets understand, we're the offspring of God. Now you better figure out this thing called judgment, and you better figure out this thing called resurrection and accept it if you want to be like the Son when he appears and like the Father when he appears. If you want to be like that, then you better accept these things. Yes, we're still waiting. Down at verse 23 it says, we're waiting for the adoption, to wit. And we didn't read verse 13 or what is it, 15 there, where it talks about the adoption. And that's a bigger subject than we're going to talk about right now. But we're waiting for the final papers, basically, that says we are, in fact, finally and completely the sons of God. And that shows up, he says, is witnessed, he says, in this thing called the redemption of your body, the purchase back of your body, the resurrection from the dead. I want to go back to John 8 for just a moment and point out some things that we read there again and have you look at those thoughts. I'm going to separate out some things here. In verse 42 in John 8, we read these words, if God were your Father, ye would love me. So if we want to be the Son of God, here's the things that we have to make the list in our mind and hold to. If God's your Father, you will love the Son, Christ. All right? In verse 45, he says, I tell you the truth, and you believe me not. Which explains why he's saying they weren't of the Father. In verse 47 he says, he that is of God heareth God's words. Ye therefore hear them not, because ye are not of God. In John 3, at verse 21, after the text that we referred to earlier, God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, I'm always intrigued by this verse. In verse 21, he says, but he that doeth truth cometh to the light. To do truth. We find it easy to say, to see or hear truth, to believe truth, but to do truth. I mean, it's one thing to say, I do the commandments, I do what God said to do, but to do truth. But remember that first commandment with promise? Love your father and your mother, or honor your father and your mother so that you can live long and prosper in the land, which he said to those people in the wilderness as they came to the mountain. Was that truth? Did they believe that? In our Sunday school lessons this morning, we were reading those stories of the kings, and it was quite apparent that there were a lot of people that didn't believe that. That didn't believe that he said, you have to do what I tell you if you want to live in this land and prosper in it. There were some that thought that they could do just whatever they wanted and had forgotten that God, their Father, their Creator, not only created them, but created the land that they stood on and maintained control over it and did not relinquish control over it. And not only their land, but all the lands of their neighbors, and maintained control over those lands and the people living in them and their behavior, and could bring those people against the people of Israel any time he thought necessary. And so it makes it easier for us to understand this idea of doing truth. Matthew 10, I'm not going to go there and read it, but at verse 34 through 37, we have this discussion in which Jesus says, you're going to know a tree by the fruit it puts out. You'll know them by their works. And interestingly enough, he says, I didn't come to bring a sword, or bring peace, but a sword. And I'm going to make a man's enemies those of his own house. And I'm going to make a man's enemies his father and his mother and his mother-in-law and his son and his daughter. And on this day, the world asks us to forget all of our differences and remember Dad. And I'm saying if we're smart, what we're going to do is remember the real Father on this day and every day, and keep Dad in perspective. Jesus also said in Mark 10, and I will read this, verse 29 and 30, said, Jesus answered and said, Verily I say unto you, there is no man that hath left house, or brethren, or sisters, or father, or mother, or wife, or children, or lands, for my sake and the gospel's, but he shall receive 100-fold now in this time. Houses and brethren and sisters and mothers and children and lands with persecution. Oh, it's not all good. He says, even in this time you're going to receive all these things with persecution, and in the world to come, eternal life. Look around you in this room. These are, and not just in this room, look around the world at those that share this same precious faith, and you will see your houses, your brothers, your sisters, your mothers and children and lands that we get in this life. Yeah, we may have to admit within our own mind, my earthly father didn't do things right. We still have to honor them. That's still the commandment. But we have to keep them in perspective. In Matthew 7, at verse 15. Actually, I want to jump down. Let's just jump down. We've covered some of these thoughts. At verse 21, it says, Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father, which is in heaven. And he goes on to say that many people are going to claim they did the works of God, but he is saying that the things that are in the list that follows are not what he's talking about. And I refer back to John 3:21. Those that do truth. What was Jesus' point in John 8? His point was, you don't listen to what I'm saying. It's what I'm telling you. It's not, he says, it isn't what I dreamed up. This is what the Father told me. You didn't hear him. You're not hearing me. You didn't hear the prophets. Those things. And he says, you hate me because I tell you the truth. So from all that, I gather that what we're looking at is, of course, the bottom line, the threshold is we have to do what's right, but we have to do it in truth. And we have to do what's right as defined by the true Father. And in closing, Matthew 5, verse 43 says, Ye have heard that it hath been said, Thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. But I say unto you, Love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that ye may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. For he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sendeth rain on the just and on the unjust. For if ye love them which love you, what reward have ye? Do not even the publicans the same? And if ye salute your brethren only, what do ye more than others? Do not even the publicans the same? Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect. And reminding ourselves once again that perfect does not mean flawless. Perfect means complete in growth, complete in understanding, complete in the work that we need to do, both mentally and morally. So if we want to be the children of God, these are the criteria that we need to follow and make every day Father's Day.